I wouldn't have chosen the bike accident, wreck, whatever you want to call it, but it did kind of make me a better person. It made me appreciative where I wasn't appreciative. I started in 1993, and we just built this massive, massive law firm. And early on, the first 5 years, I didn't take vacation. I worked 7 days a week. Where my life was headed, I don't know I'd be the person today I am if I had not had it.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. Today, I get to sit down and chat with Daryl Isaacs, widely known as The Hammer, to explore his remarkable journey as a personal injury attorney, personal injury survivor, and advocate for clients. With over 30 years of experience in the courtroom, Daryl has built a reputation for smashing through the obstacles that often stand in the way of justice. His personal experiences, including a life-altering accident that left him with serious injuries, have shaped his empathetic approach to law, allowing him to truly understand what his clients are going through during their toughest times. Daryl got his undergraduate degree from University of Kentucky and earned his JD from the University of Louisville Brandeis School of Law. He's a member of the Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio Bar, serving all three states with locations in each jurisdiction. He's a passionate advocate and innovator in marketing in the personal injury space. Today, we're going to do a deep dive into the topics that make Daryl and his firm unique. Daryl, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Thank you for being with me today on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor. Thank you so much.
I got to start off with a question for you about being struck by a car while cycling in 2015, because less than a year later, in August of 2016, I was struck by a car while heading to meet a group of cyclists that I rode with every Tuesday and Thursday for years. It was a training ride that I had done, you know, every day for a long time. And it turned my life upside down, putting me in the ICU for almost 10 days and 21 days in the hospital. And I read what happened to you at some point, either before or after I was struck. And I can't recall, but hearing you in an interview talk about its impact on your life was so similar to how I felt post being struck. And I wanted to ask you about why, for you, the experience was so life-changing and how that translated into changes that you've made within your law firm or your approaches to personal injury cases.
Yes. Well, first, let me say, I imagine your experience, like mine, was not something you chose. And, you know, I feel for you going through it. And you look great. I would have never known you've been in a, you know, bike accident by looking at you. So, you seem better. So hopefully you've recovered at least as good as you're going to get.
Well, ironically, I had a dental implant done this last week, which was 8 years post, because what happened to me was my face hit the A pillar of the car and it broke every bone in my face, broke my jaw in multiple places, knocked out seven of my teeth and broke my collarbone. So it was pretty serious like yours. So,
man, all I can say is I'm sorry. I can't imagine what you're going through because mine was different, but ugh.
It's bad either way, right?
Well, we both joined that lottery that no one wants to win.
Yeah.
So for me, it did change my life. You know, when I, my father, who is my hero, was having surgery, and, you know, he had prostate cancer and kind of survived, and then something returned. So I have three brothers, there's four of us. So we were at the hospital that morning and he underwent the surgery, and they always tell you there's a chance he won't come out. So he survived, and we all decided we're going to take shifts, and I'm a night owl. I don't really sleep a whole lot. So I said, I'm going to go home, come back. I'll take the night shift. And I was going to go for a ride because, you know, being a cyclist yourself, there's certain times, like I was in Kentucky at the time and it was cold. And this particular day was Martin Luther King. It's the first day in about 3 months that it was 65 degrees. So it was just warm enough to where, okay, I can do a ride. And interesting, came home, told my family, hey, I'll be back in an hour. And then, you know, you come back a month later. I know people think I'm insane, but I wouldn't have chosen the bike accident, wreck, whatever you want to call it. But it did kind of make me a better person. It made me appreciative where I wasn't appreciative. You know, before that, you know, I had started this firm. You know, now it's, I started in 1993. And we just built this massive, massive law firm. And, you know, I did like most people, you know, you know, early on the first 5 years, I didn't take vacation. I worked 7 days a week. And, you know, you just, where my life was headed. I don't know I'd be the person today I am if I had not had it. And like you, I mean, you had horrible injuries. I was very fortunate in that I broke my C1 and C2. And when they hang you, you get what's called a C2 fracture. But at the scene, I was fortunate because my head and neck came out of a line. And even though it was gross, my spinal cord moved out of the way. And so when I, you know, broke my neck and I had shoulder injuries where every, you know, I scalped, they had to put my scalp back on. I mean, all these bad things happen. And I just had my 12th surgery this past June. Seems like each year I'd have one or two, but I was able to survive and I didn't walk for the first 8 days. And then when I was able to walk, I don't know, it just gave me, you realize, oh my gosh, now I know what the clients are going through that I represented. And, you know, the little things that used to bug me didn't bug me and makes you have a greater appreciation for life.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know for me, I look back on it and I say that it was really the best thing that's ever happened to me because it made me reevaluate everything. You know, laying in the hospital, you know, for me, I couldn't talk. My jaw was wired shut. I'm on a ventilator.
I can't imagine.
So I had a lot of introspective time because my only method of communication was, you know, handwriting something. And
right.
But it gave me a lot of time to sit back and think about where I was and what I wanted and, you know, all those things that I think are, you know, when something like that happens, it's a pivotal moment. And for me, it was, I think the what I needed at that time for whatever reason. And, you know, since then I've used that as a way to better connect with our clients. Cause like you, I mean, we serve injured parties, you know, we do something different. We're helping them, you know, hopefully protect as much of the net proceeds as we can by making sure the liens are reduced as much as possible or protecting their government benefits, those sorts of things. But it, you know, for me, it became just a little bit different. You know, I had always served that population, but the mission about helping those people, there was a connection because, you know, once you've experienced it, you know exactly what clients are going through. And, you know, even though both of our incidents were pretty serious and bad, you know, I've seen through my career just how awful some of these things can be for the family members and for the person that's been injured. So, yeah. You know, it gives you that deeper understanding.
You mentioned that became my tagline. I'd represented thousands before, you know, wrongful death, brain injuries, amputees. I didn't really know what they were going through. I thought I did. But then when you go through, you know, one of the experiences that was horrible is one of the surgeries, they woke me up intubated. Now, they didn't tell me that. And they did it because if they took it out and I wasn't breathing, I would die. Because, you know, once you break your neck, to intubate you, they can't snap your head back. So many bad experiences. But everything they did And maybe, I don't know, I can imagine, like, you would know this answer, but I would tell people. So, you know, you can go 30 plus days on water, nutrients, and no food. But what happens to you when you don't drink fluids after 4 or 5 days? You know, and I imagine you were in that boat because of your jaw being wired. But I lost my swallowing muscles, and I didn't know that because they had, you know, they had wires and they had tubes, and I was, you know, I was in and out. They kept me in a semi-induced coma. So I had to learn to swallow again. And then, you know, before they'll even let you eat, you have to do that barium test where, and the first time I did it, I was aspirating my lungs, and I think little things like that. And so when I came out, I was in a neck brace for, I don't know how many months after, because I'd already had 2 neck surgeries when I was finally discharged. But my new slogan, because we were doing a lot of marketing, is I know what you're going through. And in fact, one of the clients hired us and, you know, we got a $10 million verdict. And the lady said her husband was killed by a truck. It was sad. But anyway, after the verdict and then she did a testimonial, they were asking her, why did you pick this firm? And she was talking about her brother called right as she learned her husband died. And he said, do you know who to call? And she goes, I absolutely know who to call. You know, I'm going to call the hammer because he knows what I'm going through. And when I heard that, how powerful it was, I thought, wow. And so even to this day, when I meet with these clients, I never want them to think, oh, like you, I don't want to minimize what you went through or compare mine to yours, because whatever you went through is so real and genuine to you. But at the same time, I really didn't know what they were going through until I experienced what I went through. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I really do understand what the individual's going through. Now there's some type of cases I won't know. Like, you know, I think one of the worst cases to get as a parent is to represent someone who lost a child in a wrongful death case. And oh, it's just so tragic. But you know, we do a lot of brain injury TBI cases. And because I have a TBI, I got a brain injury. For me, it's not that it's personal. It's just, you know, I want to give a voice to those that can't give a voice to themselves. And so anyway, but when you mention that, and I mean to get off on a tangent, you know what they're going through. I'm like, that became one of my major slogans because I do know what they go through for the most part.
I've learned that even though I'm a lawyer and, you know, am in this field, I still navigated a lot of stuff that I had no idea, you know, was part of all of this, from the emotional to the physical to the stuff with insurance, you know, particularly because all my dental injuries, you know, our health insurance plan, which was an ERISA plan, said it would only cover it if it was complete within 1 year of trauma. And mine couldn't be completed within 1 year of trauma because they needed to stage it. I mean, it was like a reconstruction had to be done anyway. But stuff like that, it's like all those little things that, I thankfully, one of my close friends here in Orlando represented me. I knew so many personal injury lawyers. So it was, you know, obviously I had a million different people that could represent me, but I had somebody who was a friend and, you know, so, but even with all of that, it still was a really difficult, traumatic experience to try and handle, and I had a company where people could carry on what I did and I could recover. And most people don't have that luxury. I mean, there's so many things that, you know, people don't understand and realize about what you go through when something like this happens, particularly, and that's what frustrates me with tort reform is, you know, all of that stuff, because those legislators typically have no clue because they've never experienced, their family hasn't. And then when their family has an accident, then they go, what did I do here? You know, anyway, on a tangent, but.
So true. One of the states I'm licensed, Indiana, they passed, they had caps on damages in certain cases, and the sponsor of the bill, I don't remember his name, but I just remember later on, his grandchild became a quadriplegic or something. And that's one of the things he was talking about. He he passed something that really hurt his family. And you're right, they really don't know. And I don't think he would make the same decision today that he made given what he knew. But
for sure. I seriously doubt it. I'm curious, though, in with what you went through, did that influence how you went about the relationships with your clients and how you engaged with them? Like, I'm just curious if that all changed after having had the experiences you had.
Yes. I mean, well, after I went through it because of part of my injuries and my brain injury, I had to get more help. I mean, doctors, you know, that's when I hired like a marketing director. I started hiring people to kind of run the firm. I could no longer do the day-to-day stuff that I used to do. And then ultimately I thought, you know, what do I really want to do is litigation and go back and do what I started. Moons, you know, when I first came out, I worked for a real famous criminal attorney, and I didn't like criminal law, but I mean, I worked for him during law school, and I got to sit through 22 jury trials with him during law school. I kept cutting class and ended up taking an extra, it took me 4 years to get a 3-year degree. And then when I came out, I started doing litigation for like Gary Becker, who was a big TV firm. And then I got away from that because when I went on TV myself, I mean, I think I had 1500 cases when the first 6 months, it was insane. When I did it back in 1996, there wasn't the competition you have like today. But after the accident, it made me realize I want to spend more time with my family, and B, I wanted to go build our litigation up and have other people kind of run the firm. And so, you know, since then we've built a, you know, $2 million courtroom, and we've done all kinds of stuff. Then, you know, then I went and studied the Jerry Spence Ranch. I mean, I've done stuff, but everything I do, even the psychodrama, it helps you understand A, what the client's going through, and B, I could relate better. And, you know, even now, I mean, I got a ton of attorneys work for me, and I may only have 10 cases that I work on, but I just look at everything different. I handle everything different. And, I think it's all because of what I went through. I just think it made me, you know, maybe more right for the job than, let's say, I was before the accident.
So are there specific practices your firm has implemented to ensure high levels of client satisfaction and loyalty, to get back to that idea of how do law firms build these strong client relationships?
We could always do a better job. I grew up in the service industry where I flipped burgers. You know, I was a manager of a restaurant. Everything I did taught me customer service. And even in 1977, I remember flipping burgers, and they made us the work for a place called Burger Queen. The customer signed the check, which I always thought that was cool. And they made us listen to Earl Nightingale tapes back then. And it was all about customer service. So I've tried to implement a lot of that today. But, you know, right before this, I was meeting with one of my attorneys on, you know, a major case, and it looks like they're going to get a settlement. I was hoping we'd get to try it, but that's why I always, okay, so tell me about the client contact then, because it wasn't one of the cases I was working on. I do think I'm trying to get all of our attorneys, you know, the hardest thing in the world is getting a case. And so the thing that separates law firms, I think, just like banks, they all give within a quarter of a point, but it's the service. So I think we could always give better service. But what we try to do, and you know, I'm trying to, is, you know, we have rules that, you know, we're supposed to make client contact every so often. I just like a lot of touches with the client, what I call touches. You know, text, email, phone call. I know in my cases, you know, I'm usually every other month, I'm bringing the clients in, I bring them in my courtroom, I let them sit down, I want them to get familiar with, but I'm old fashioned. The old days, I would meet with them all. It's today's world is, you know, because of COVID, we've lost a lot of that. I think anytime we can get the client one-on-one or face-to-face, I think that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to get all my attorneys to buy in, but we could always do better.
You started off talking about what you went through, what I went through, and that really touches on this topic of empathy. And I'm curious, How do you effectively harness empathy and vulnerability in your courtroom strategies? And I know you include psychodrama to create that genuine emotional connection with jurors that ultimately influences their decision-making, creating that desire to help your clients. How do you use that so effectively?
I could do a better job because the one attorney, so we have lit and pre-lit attorneys. And it's funny you say that. I've always used empathy my whole life and vulnerability because early on, I mean, I failed so much. So when you fail, you either get better or you crawl into a rock. And then I'd studied, like, Flunked the Bar twice. I would study Zig Ziglar. You know, he talked about him being a failure, and then he became, you know, second best salesman of 5,000 salespeople company. So learning lessons like that, and he said the best teachers are the ones that fail the most. And I thought, I must be one of the best in the world because I've failed more than anybody. But I think empathy, how we try to do it now is, you know, and I touched on this last week. I don't care who you are. Everybody has to market themselves, whether you're trying to get a spouse, get in law school, get a job, whatever. And the best way to market yourself or the best way to influence people is by empathy. You know, if you interviewed me and I said, hey, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, who wants to listen to that? But if you interview me and I teach like I teach last week, I teach from all my failures. I'm vulnerable. I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to show you, gosh, yes, I flunked a bar twice by one multi-state question. How many people want to admit their failures? But if I can teach you from my failures, I think it elevates me to where I'm going to be more credible, believable. But empathy, the only way to really get true empathy is through true vulnerability. And, you know, attorneys struggle with this. Everybody talks about I have a unique and very blessed way. I've gotten so many cases, so many million-dollar cases. And, you know, even now, I mean, I got on any given day 27 to 30 lawyers in my firm, but I bring in 99% of the business. I wish they would help me more. But I, through my vulnerability and empathy and how you carry it in the courtroom, like a friend I was telling you, she just got a verdict. But she called me 2 days ago and she said the defense attorney, and she studied with me at the ranch. I call it the Jerry Spence Ranch, but, you know, she's done a lot of psychodrama with me, but she was telling me the defense attorney was doing what they do. I mean, they were beating up on her client, even called her client. Had she lost weight, she probably wouldn't have been hurt as much. She should join a gym. And, you know, most attorneys probably would want to object, but she's kind of learned through when you see the jurors, they imagine themselves being on that stand and getting that stuff. I knew my girl's going to get a verdict because she didn't. She let them scorn. And this defense attorney did what he gave us, you know, say us, we're all together. He gave us a gift. And I think empathy is the one gift that if attorneys use correctly, it can help them. And not just, you know, with the jury and the trial, with life. If you think about it, we all, even when I started trying cases early on, I learned how to try the defense case because, you know, you think about it, the defense argues causation, or if it's causation, oh, they're injured. If they're injured, they had a pre-existing. If it's pre-existing, it was dormant. And, if you are hurt, well, it's not worth that much. And, you know, give them 10, 20 grand. What do we do as plaintiff attorneys? Traditionally, we combat them. We fight them. We get upset. We do the cross-examination where we're so proud. We just destroyed a witness. And what's the jury see? They see, well, that point must be credible because you're both arguing over it. But then we're taught, you know, later in life when I went to Jerry Spence to do a soft cross, you know, don't argue with them. Let the jury, like one of the things, if you study Jerry Spence, even one of his first $10 million verdicts, they objected, I think, 17 times in the closing. And he said the more they objected, the more the jury was just pissed off. So I think you can use empathy in so many effective ways, but to do it, you have to get rid of your ego, which attorneys struggle with that.
Well, since we're talking about trial advocacy and you mentioned Jerry Spence, what specific insights or techniques from Jerry Spence's method reshaped your passion for trial work and transformed your approach to advocacy?
For me, it was a natural fit because I'm never going to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm never going to be smarter than the doctor expert or the defense witness or even the defense attorney. I mean, you know, some of these defense attorneys try hundreds and hundreds of cases. What Jerry Spence allowed is just be yourself, be the best version of yourself. And they teach to be vulnerable and they teach you to be compassionate and they teach you, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. So for me, it opened my eyes because early on, I loved studying famous trial lawyers. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I used to study like Joseph Jamel and Philip Corboy and Richard Racehorse Haynes and Stanley Prosser. And I could go Russ Herrmann. I could go on and on. I would fly to their cities or I would call them on the phone or like, I thought it was so cool. Philip Corboy responded to one of my letters because we didn't have email back then. And he wrote me and sent me a book. And, you know, Russ Herrmann would take my phone call and I'm like, oh my God. So it was great. But then, what do? We, you know, one of my first during law school, I was blessed enough to get certified by the Supreme Court. I did an internship for Public Defender. So I got to really go argue a live case in court for an indigent client. And I'll never forget, I had F. Lee Bailey's book. I took his closing argument and I rewrote it and I memorized it and I just changed the name and I gave it. And the jury didn't give me a verdict because at some point the prosecution gave our client a really great deal, but the gentleman that supervised me, Dan Goette, who ran the public defender, he pulled me aside and he critiqued me and he said, I just want you to know that was the worst closing I've ever seen in my life. And I kept thinking, well, wait a minute. I just copied F. Lee Bailey, but I could learn from everyone, but I'm the one that has to deliver it. And the only person I could really be what Jerry Spence and them taught me is to be me. And I don't have to be Russ Herrmann and I have to be Philip Corboy. It's not that I don't want to be, I'll never be. So they teach you how to go and be yourself and get comfortable in your own skin. Actually, they teach you to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I mean, how many times you got up anywhere, either to argue a case or give a presentation? Last week, I'm, you know, room full of all these attorneys and we got ready to start. And guess what? You knew it was going to happen. I had a 200-point power presentation. They couldn't get the computer on the screen. And I just laughed and I said, I don't need it. And I just started talking. And then they came 30 minutes later while I'm talking and they fixed it. Something's always going to go wrong. So you just have to adapt. So I know I feel like I'm giving you long answers, but, you know, there's so many great methods out there. The reptile. The reason I really chose Jerry Spence over all of them is nothing's in writing. And the reptile, while it's fabulous, I've seen more reptile defense motions in limine now all over the country. And I don't have to worry about that Jerry Spence because there's nothing. I mean, they go and teach us connectivity, but, you know, I don't know that very few defense attorneys will ever figure it out. I mean, you can tell them what you're doing, but they're still going to be a jerk, and that helps us.
Well, so I wanted to ask you about you, because you were just talking about being you in an area where that you've had this incredible success and been an innovator, which is marketing and branding. And as the Hammer, you've built this incredible personal brand and legal community. How have your marketing strategies evolved over the years to effectively communicate this brand to potential clients?
Well, that's a fabulous question. I get asked all the time, so I always try to give the same answer. But when you're forced to start your own firm, you know, my grades were terrible. I flunked the bar twice. No one's interviewing me. The one attorney that offered me a job, I didn't want to do criminal law. So when you're out there, you know, I did what everybody initially, I hustled. I went to all the TV firms and to send me your cases. I went to every attorney and said, I'll take the stuff you don't want. And they started sending me their crap. And you work and then, you know, you get lucky some and start getting some good fees. I would send them to the attorneys. But over time, what I realized is if I just do what I've done my whole life, I've always learned, I don't even call it sell, you service. You know, when I was a kid, I delivered papers and my favorite example of when I first learned customer service, I don't know, I was like 6 or 7, but I was delivering papers and I was too young to have it my name. So I had my brother's name But back then, you know, we wouldn't dare let our kids. Now, back then, you would deliver. We delivered the Courier Journal at 4 a.m. and then the Louisville Times and after school. But the first ride I had was something called the Jeffersonian, and it was a not – you didn't have to pay. It was optional. So I would deliver it once a week, and then they would send me to collect, and I go knock on the door, and this 6-7-year-old kid, I don't know how old I was, but – and they give me a $5 every month. So I got this idea. I went to my dad and said, you know, love donuts. Krispy Kreme, you can buy a dozen for 50 cents. I went and said, I want to buy 10 dozen. And I went to five neighbors and sold 2 dozen each. I made $15. So the next week, and I convinced my dad to take me, and I got 100 dozen. And I just started. I realized you could give someone what they want, create a demand and service it. And I've done that over the years. And so what we did was I always sold my personality because I'm, you know, I'm not going to outsmart anybody, but I found if I was genuine, real and authentic and I worked hard, then I started getting these cases. And then when I decided to go on TV, I actually wanted my dad to be the one because he was older, looked more distinguished. And, I never forget we met with an advertising company and the guy said, it's got to be me. And I thought, why? And he said, because I can sell your personality. So that started, that's what I've kind of done. And over the years, you know, I'm always honest. I'm always ethical. I'm always real. Like I don't tell the potential client what they want to hear. I tell them the truth. And if they don't choose me, that's fine. But it's just over the years, that's what I've sold. And I went with this one agency and we were the heavy hitter. And when I left, he would let me take it. And I thought, I can make anything work. Not in an arrogant way. I just knew whatever I did, I had to sell me. And so that's when I kind of came up with, it was actually the Kentucky Hammer. And I got a copyright trademark. And then Jim Adler's, the Texas Hammer, he applied and they wouldn't let him do it unless he got my blessing. So we worked something out and it just became the Hammer, but I've just used it over the years. I don't know if it's the Hammer so much as, I always try to just be real and honest and ethical. And I think so many, especially trial lawyers, a lot of times, and you know, I work with both, but I think the higher one's ego, it's just hard. And so a lot of people are like, well, how do you get these cases? Well, I'm just real. You know, I gave an example last week. I was workshopping and I always give this example. And if it teaches people, but I had this one lady who, her son, I think did 3 tours. He was a hero. She came, I forgot what country, but she didn't speak English very well. And she lived with her son and he was everything. He, you know, she didn't have a license. He took care of everything. Well, when he retired from the military, he went to work at Lowe's and he was a passenger one day and they had loaded his little, truck to go make a delivery and the load shifted and it killed him. And she had talked to 2 other firms and, you know, somebody knows she got a hold of us. And when I talked to her, I mean, she had mentioned she talked to others and I knew right away, well, obviously they didn't get the case. And I knew I'd get the case. And how I did it is most people were going to, when she says it, yeah, I can get you a lot of money. I can do this and that. And when she told me the limited facts and I understood that this guy was her world. And then I just said, well, I always say, I can't imagine what you're going through, but, and she's like, what do you mean? I said, what do you need? I mean, you don't need a lawyer right now. Have you buried him? Have you made funeral arrangements? She goes, well, I can't drive. And I thought, okay, then I know what you need. So I said, if you want, you know, I sent one of my attorneys and I said, you know, cause she said, I want you. And I knew she would, but first of all, I could sign her up and she doesn't really have the authority. She's got to get appointed by the court. So I sent someone up and for 3 days, he stayed in a hotel and whenever she needed him, he would go and pick her up and take her wherever. And sometimes we just got to be human beings. And so a lot of times to get these cases, you really got to listen. What do they need? I mean, because like I say, we all give the same pitch. We're the bank. We all have within 0.25 point, but the service. And so I've just found my personality is what I'm trying to sell for our firm and it's worked. Now, not the greatest, I'm not the best, and there's so many others that do much better than me. I can only tell you what works for me.
Well, I'm curious, though, because, you know, it's become a lot more competitive. Our local market is dominated by Morgan & Morgan, which not every jurisdiction has that sort of thing. But certainly there's a lot more competition in terms of the legal marketing, whether it's online. What do you think are the most important things to uniquely position a firm like you have done in the eyes of potential clients from that specific marketing angle?
Most people, when you say the name Morgan & Morgan, they all get angry. He's coming in, he's taking all the business. I get that. But I took a different approach. He's coming in like Walmart did. My grandfather used to have an independent jewelry store. And Walmart came in and my grandfather would sell Bulova watches, Keystone, which meant double. So he'd buy it for 75, mark it up to like 150, give it 20% off and, you know, maybe make 40, 50 bucks. Well, Walmart comes in and's retailing $39 these same watches. John Morgan, I mean, look, I'm not a fan of him, but you got to respect what he's done. He's killed it. And so he's coming in. What are you going to do? You're going to quit practicing or are you going to survive? If you're going to survive, you got to learn how to compete with him. So what can you do that he doesn't? First of all, I doubt any new client's going to get John Morgan on the phone. I give my cell phone to everyone. I probably give it to 100,000 people. I give everybody my cell phone. I still get a lot of cases on my cell phone. So one of the things I do different is we try to give better service. We do a lot of local stuff. You know, Morgan's advertising and, you know, like I say, we can get mad or, okay, how can we learn from it? How do we compete? You got to find what you do really well and do that. I know firms early on when he's probably been in Kentucky, gosh, 12, 14, 15 years. In the first year, I had three or four of the firms call me and what are they going to do? And I said, well, what's your plan? And they all were going to try dollar for dollar. And I said, you won't survive. Because, I mean, I heard he went into Atlanta and, you know, first year he lost, what, 12, 15 million. How many people could afford to do that? So what we do is, and we didn't do that, and a lot of firms did two or three, and one of them's out of business now. But we decided, okay, what can we do different? So we try to give better customer service. We try to always be available. We try to give our clients cell numbers. And a lot, you know, Morgan & Morgan, they try a lot of cases. They got some great, I mean, Keith Mythic's one of the best trial lawyers in the country. So make no bones, they got some good lawyers, but they can't represent everybody. And so, like I tell people this, if I'm the only lawyer advertising in my state, I'm still not going to resonate with a certain percentage of people. So try to do stuff that makes you stand out. And we do a lot of charitable things like, you know, once a year, we give away 4,000 or 5,000 backpacks. And then everybody, you know, we show that we're human, that we're not just these blood sucking shark attorneys. And the last couple of years, this past year, we just found 151 forever homes, you know, through the Humane Society. And we had thousands at this event. And I couldn't get over like this one month. I knew what my average new cases are, but this one month that I did it, I got 100 additional personal injury cases that I didn't get before. And so a lot of things I do are, what can I do to stand out that John Morgan's not doing, or not even John Morgan. Now, because of Arizona, you got all these national law firms. So I just think you, especially the trial attorney, or if you don't try the case, getting the case, I think, is probably 90% of the battle. And the only way to do it is make sure whatever your product is, the customer knows about it and you're out there and you distinguish yourself different. Because right when I went on TV in 96, say in Louisville, Kentucky, there were 5 law firms doing it. Now, on any given day, there's probably 40 to 50. I'm on in Indianapolis, Louisville, Lexington. It doesn't matter where. I'm at, and Morgan's on, you know, probably in every state. So it's not just him. It's all these national firms. So you got to either get better or you're going to go out of business.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that community connection and the grassroots stuff. You know, I've had other guests recently talking about just the power of that in terms of as part of your marketing strategy. And certainly what you've talked about is confirmation of the importance of that to not only stand out, but just that connection, that building relationships in the local community, which not everyone does. And it's an easy easier way of going about the branding because of the fact that it is just grassroots.
This is a hard concept. An attorney struggle, my attorney struggle. We all want to put ourselves first. So if you're selfish, it's hard. But if you put others first, like I didn't know, you know, when I recovered from my accident, some said I wouldn't walk. I knew I'd walk because I'm, you know, I'm a persistent. That's what I'm going to keep doing what I need to do. But I decided to help as many people do what I do. So when I started helping others is when my practice really blew up. Even now, the more I do, that's why I travel around. I help everything because it helps me. And I don't do it just for that. I feel good helping other people. And when you go out there, even your marketing and advertising, I mean, you know, I want to help people because, I mean, hey, we're very blessed. We make tons of money in these cases, but it makes me feel good helping the client. And it also makes me feel good helping other attorneys. So I think if you can put others first, and that was one of the things Zig Ziglar, never met him. I mean, you know, died after I started studying him. I wish I'd went and saw him live. But he said, you can get anything in this world if you help enough people get what they want. So I always thought if I help you get what you want, in turn, I might get what I want. But if not, it'll come to me down the road. So that's what I wish all our profession, we all attack each other instead of what can we do to raise everybody up? Because, you know, the insurance company does a great job making us lawyers in general look bad. So we should help each other.
Well, I do think that, you know, I mean, I've seen the community. Actually, I've got my little honey badger, which when I was in the hospital, a group of trial lawyers that I was on a listserv with sent that to me. And, you know, I do think that there's a real cool sense of community amongst trial lawyers. Obviously, that there is the competitiveness in the local jurisdictions, but there is that willingness, people like you who go out of their way to help other law firms. And for the very reason that you said and expressed is exactly why you do those things.
You mentioned a honey badger, then you got to see this video. You can go YouTube it, but I'm one of those, you know, until it's over, it's not over. And, anyway, someone sent me this because they know, you know, I'm stubborn, but I'm tenacious and persistent. But there's a honey badger that is literally probably 10, 20 seconds from death from a big anaconda, a python. And most animals that would get out, these two foxes came and started messing with it. And the honey badger played dead forever or didn't fight it. And then when it's got its chance, it freed itself. Most animals would run away. It just pissed it off. It ended up not only killing the snake, but eating it, or you didn't see it, but that's what it was doing. And it went from death to being, and I just thought, wow, what a story of persistence and triumph. But since I love honey badgers because they're with 30, 40 pounds, and even bears, no one wants to mess with them. So I saw that. You ought to go check that out. You can, like I say, go on YouTube, and if you Google enough information, it's about 3-4 minutes, but watch it. It gives you hope.
Well, personally, I took the honey badger mentality to heart when I was, you know, in the hospital. I'm sure it was the same, you know, that determination that you need for that and to be successful in life in general, right? I mean, that's part of what, you know, I think does differentiate people. I'm curious. So, you know, you've grown this incredible firm, and I know it's difficult because I really focus on this is making sure that my team remains aligned around our core values and mission, you know, as we're growing while maintaining operational efficiency and all those things. You know, given what you guys do, how have you managed to maintain that with your team, given the growth and scaling of your firm?
We grew so fast, so big, we kind of forgot the goal. You know, the goal was to try and get these monster verdicts and then help everyone. And we became a factory. Then we shifted and we started doing well. And then COVID came and I struggle now because 2 years ago, I wouldn't let anybody work remote. And then I had about 8 to 10 great employees left because everyone else let them work remote. And so now, I mean, I have 4 office buildings and 1 courtroom. And one building housed at one point like 80 employees. Now on any given day, I was just there's 10 because everybody wants to work remote. I don't know that I've handled all this very well. Now my trial lawyers and they really can't work remote because I want them in the courtroom a lot practicing. But, and now that I'm trying to grow our litigation department even more, it's hard because I can get all the cases in the world. It's getting the staff, getting everyone, you know, we're trying to get everybody trained in the mentality. I mean, I've even gone so far as to send some of my lawyers to the Jerry Spence and they came back and I thought, wow, they're going to be just like me as far as they're going to want to do this and that. And they came back and some of them didn't embrace it. And I thought, you know, the challenge, I don't know if you have people work with you because before today I didn't meet you. I'm, you know, now it's like, you're a very interesting guy. I got to get to know better. But the challenge is people aren't going to, if you own the business, not everybody's going to want the same goals. And, you know, that to them, a lot of it's a paycheck and a lot of them are doing well, but what if they really excelled? So I struggle, you know, I help a lot of other attorneys out there, but I'm trying to teach my own and it's a struggle.
I don't know that I'm a master at this, but what I figured out was that I had to over and over, and I do it every time we have an all hands each month and any chance I have on teams when we're talking about the people that we've helped is to reinforce the importance of who we serve, why we do what we do, why we fight so hard, what those people have been through. And when we have a new person join the team, I onboard them about our mission. And then I actually take them through what happened to me and say, here's what someone goes through. Here's just a little glimpse because my accident was so much less than what most of our clients go through. And here's why what you do is so important. It's tough because not everybody is going to feel as passionate as you do about it. But I do think there is something to that continued messaging around why we do what we do and giving people that meaning and purpose to what they do each day.
I think it's fabulous what you're doing. I'll try it. You know, again, I don't want to sound negative. It's just, I know I'm in business and it's not just to make money. It's to help the people. And I know what they went through, but I just think some of these attorneys, they, even the ones that get a great result, they're ready to go to the next case. And I want to build a relationship. And one of the things I teach, you know, I want to be that lawyer for life. I want this person to think of me for the next 100 years. We get a lot of referral, a lot of repeat because of that. And I know a lot of law firms nowadays with Google and marketing and, you know, the internet's really opened the new wave of getting cases. But, you know, sometimes these firms, and I've taught them, I mean, one firm I started working with, and I'm not going to sit here and take all the credit, but he'll tell you he had 25 people. Now he's over 650, but I started teaching a lot of the principles that we use. I mean, he just left everybody in the dust, but now they've become so hungry. I think at some point it's hard to teach your attorneys, no matter how big and successful or how many cases we get, we still got to make the client happy one client at a time and one person at a time. And think about when they call us. Tellers of the bank, I used to think of, because, you know, my wife used to be a teller. People come in and you're the first line of defense. Most people come in, they're not happy. You know, they got bills or they got this or they can't get their check cashed. Well, we're the same way. People call us, they have problems. The insurance company, if they did their job, there'd be nothing for you and I to do. So when they come in, they're unhappy and all that. And what if our people do after a while when they, you know, 5-6 hours in a day, they're getting client complaint after complaint, it's hard for them to have the compassion. And I just think we all forget that. And so I'm going to try what you did. I'm going to try out every new employee. You know, we onboard them, we do all this training, but maybe we're not doing a good job as you all are doing because I still struggle with this.
I think it's a challenge for any business. And, you know, the one thing that we have in common is just that every day we get a chance to help make a difference in people's lives.
Sure.
Whereas you go to work in a lot of places and you never get that feeling of knowing, hey, we helped somebody. We did good. We, you know, when I graduated from law school, I did insurance defense work, which I hated because I always felt like I wasn't helping anybody. I'm just doing a job and I'm a cog in the wheel of grinding people down, you know, and now it's the complete opposite. I see what we do and how it benefits people. And I feel very blessed that we have a business that's what it's all about. It's not about, you know, selling a widget. We're actually doing good, just like you guys.
Well, the good thing though, you know, the defense side, I only did one insurance company. We kept suing for bad faith. They called me one day and we're tired of you suing us. Would you consider doing defense work? I'm like, no, I don't. I'm like, well, what if we taught our inner workings? And I thought, okay. So I took, they sent me two files in the first 2 weeks. I looked at it. I called them and said, you all need to pay these. I sent it back. I said, I can't do defense work. I mean, some engineer hit someone. They had a minimum limit of 25 and the person he hit had surgery and our guy ran two red lights and they didn't want to pay the 25. I thought, and I'm telling the insuree, you need to get someone to protect you beyond the 25. So I will never know what you know because I didn't do defense work. So I think that's some another tool in your tool shed that you're able to use.
So a couple of more questions. I'll let you go. I'm curious if you guys have really started to see a shift and deploy technology in terms of your practice and how you ultimately enhance your efficiency and the way you deliver your services to clients.
Yes, 100%. In fact, today the attorney I was talking about was meeting on a case was complaining about we're switching case management system. We've been through three and I don't even want to say the one we're going to because people hear I'm using it and they go do it. And then if it doesn't work, they get mad at me. But regardless which one we're using, it's only as good as your staff is willing to do. But with technology, there is something else. Now there's all these text services that we can text videos. Like I just shot 25 videos on different things, like a new client. This is what you can expect. And, you know, if it goes to trial, you can expect this. And when your settlement comes, you can expect this. And we want to start texting that to people and we want to start keeping them more informed. And I think that's going to reduce, you know, we got some clients, they call 3-4 times a day. They got nothing else going on. They're thinking about all the money they're not getting. They're living paycheck to paycheck. I get it. So technology is, we're trying different things that will do a better job of us communicating with the client and be maybe, you know, keep them better informed. You know, the old way we'd mail, go through the mail, and then you start email. Well, email's almost obsolete. Now texting is, I think, 50% more effective, at least from our studies. We always study what can we do to do better. But I was on a call 30 minutes before this, and my COO was telling me, he just had a discussion about AI, how it can do this one part. So we, like everybody else, are looking for what technology can improve our customer service experience. But I don't want to replace the human connection because connectivity, you know, when people say, how did you do what you did? It's all about connecting. I mean, you know, you can't expect someone that you don't know. Like if I first met you and said, hey, trust me, you shouldn't trust me. You shouldn't trust anybody until you get to know them. And then ultimately, like jurors, if they're going to pick somebody, maybe they'll pick me and my side because I have a connection or I've got trust or, you know, and it's getting a new case is the same way. You can talk to someone, but if they don't trust you and like you, they're not going to hire you. So I don't want to do anything that's going to lose that connectability with the client.
Yeah, I had a guest on the podcast several years ago, Joey Coleman, who's an author, wrote a book, Never Lose a Customer Again. And he talked about that exactly what you just talked about, because he calls himself a recovering lawyer. He had done some criminal defense work early on, but now he's a speaker and has written these best-selling books. But he great book, great guy, but that connection, and he just felt like the law profession has done a really poor job in doing those things and letting clients know, here's what to expect, here's, you know, because if you don't know, I mean, it is daunting to be in that position where you're just going, hey, I don't know when this is going to resolve. And I don't know what I'm going to get. Don't know what to expect. All those things are really scary for a client.
100%. Totally agree. I have to get his book.
It's a good read. I'm curious, because you mentioned a COO. At what point did you realize that you needed someone sitting in that kind of seat as your firm was growing?
I've always been the CEO, but I've always been approachable. And I don't know, at some point I couldn't do it all. And so I tried to bring in someone to be a COO. And, you know, that experiment didn't really work. personality was just too rigid for them. And then I kind of felt like I abandoned them. And so then I realized I'll be the CEO, but I need a COO. I can't do the day-to-day stuff. I don't understand, you know, great example. The old days, you know, I'll never forget, I'm sitting there walking over, you know, one case I settled early on my career for $4 million. Well, I had to have her turned down $2 million. And it's not that I don't trust her, but back then I'm like, I want everything in writing, and making her sign that, you know, we were talking, and she's like, I don't know that I can reject it. I'm like, okay, I get it. But so I'm old fashioned. I make them sign it. What am I authorized? Well, today I'm sitting here talking, and now, you know, our firm records authorization. And I thought, I don't know that I like that. So if you got a client that's, you know, I always bring something, like if you're a court, well, they just offered me and turn it down, accept it, whatever. But if, like this attorney today, I mean, we had a case that settled for almost $1 million, and the client authorized him at a lower amount, but he put it on recording. And I'm like, well, what if you lose the recording? I mean, I'm a visual guy. So, but then I found out we have these systems in place. And so I need a COO that can protect every aspect. I just can't do it because, I mean, you know, certain things I'm good at, but I'm a softie. Everybody comes to me and I'm, you know, no, 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 or yes, yes, yes. And then my manager's like, why did you just? So I realized being the owner, I got to take my, you know, and I'm not trying to be a true CEO, but you look at a lot of these people that, you know, maybe Amazon or something like that, they're not messing with the day to day. So what I like is the litigation and the marketing. And that's kind of what I deal with. There's no way you can, you know, I have 140 people. I can't manage them all.
I get it. Yeah, we got.
I needed help.
Yeah, I get it. You know, that's, it's critical. But you know what you do see typically are a lot of law firms operating without someone in that seat, really analyzing how the firm operates. Are they operating at peak efficiency? Because I talk a bit about this with, you know, whether a firm makes a decision or not to outsource to a group like us, Lien Resolution. Well, if you look at that from a financial perspective and analyze it, you may make a COO may make that decision, whereas many law firm owners might not, because they don't even have their finger on the pulse of, well, what would make our law firm operate more efficiently and profitably and deliver even better client results, right? Because they don't have someone that thinks that way. And it's hard because, you know, when you go to law school, they don't teach you any of that. You know, I mean, it's not something that's part of the curriculum.
100% what you just said. I agree 100%.
All right. So I don't want to take up any more of your time, but I did want to give you one last question to answer. And since it's Trial Lawyer Review, I always ask this, and it's completely open-ended. You can talk about whatever you want, even if it's not related to this, but what's your view as a trial lawyer?
Every firm should litigate cases. I think, and we're still trying, many of my attorneys try the good ones. I mean, they settle the good ones and try the bad ones, and it's the opposite. We need to make a better decision on cases, because one thing I learned, I want to help everybody, but you know, if we have a case that's worth 10 grand, I'm not going to get $1 million for it. But if we have a case worth 3 million, I could settle it for $1 million. So what we need to do is we need to try and get full value on the cases, or at least get them to settle for full value. I just think we are giving the insurance company discounts. And I didn't realize this until I went and studied. You know, again, you think you know everything and you know nothing. I trained under a certain trial attorney and I did things for a certain way. And I made the decision when I went back to the Jerry Spence and I read the book, I'm going to go in and forget everything I ever learned. And it opened my eyes that, you know, you could take a story and, you know, this is, I'm going to tell you the mistake I made. So I'm only telling for me. I always said what happened to the client. And what happens is jurors give them what the defense pretty much tells them to give them. When we stopped talking about what happened to the client and we started showing why, then all of a sudden the cases started getting more value. And the better story, the more money. And now what we've learned, if we can show not only why, but we can show the danger, we can show a betrayal, we can show the bad defendant's conduct, then a jury, if we can get them to get emotional, they will make decisions on their emotions. And if they get angry, they'll give me more money than if they're not angry. If I can get the jury to imagine that my client could be them, you know, the golden rule, I can't put them in that spot. But what I can do is I can show them, can you imagine that this potentially is happening to a loved one that you know or your special friend? Would you allow me to get them full justice, or do you want me to get them half justice? So I just got to get the jury to imagine what I want them to imagine. And in return, they'll give me more money and hopefully I'll win more. And, you know, but we've not done a good job in a lot of these years, and now we're trying to get better. And even today, I mean, I had an attorney in my office. He's been practicing 20 years and he's trying to tell me why he's so great. And I'm just sitting there thinking, can you at least perceive the possibility that you don't know everything and maybe you could learn more? And the day I quit learning more is the day I need to quit practicing law. So I think, you know, there's some law firms that I've coached that never want to try a case, and I get it, then get someone to try your cases. But if you don't try enough cases, the jury's going to pay you what you deserve. But if you start getting a lot of verdicts, you'll be surprised how much more money you'll get paid. And I'm even shocked sometimes what we're getting paid on the face of it. I don't think it's worth it. But flip side, it all changed like when we got a $10 million verdict. And so I think verdicts can change your life. And I think now there's so many avenues to get better and learn, you know, besides a reptile. I mean, there's just so many. Jerry Spence, we own Jerry Spence, there's others. But I just think the more cases you try, the better. It's going to raise the value in all your cases.
Great advice. So if people have questions about anything you've talked about today, looking for someone to refer a case to in your local jurisdictions that you guys practice in, I know you've got a book too. If they want to get in touch with you, want to learn more, what's the best way?
Well, I give my cell number. Text me, I think, is my preferred method of contact. My cell number is 502-817-1000. I always tell people 8 minus 1 is 7, 1000. My email is easy if you can spell my first name right. It's Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, at wewin.com. I did write a book. My writer wrote it. He just watched me do a lot of presentations. I don't make anything off. In fact, I give it away, but you can get it on Amazon for 10, 15 bucks. Reach out, I'll send you one. The only reason I would suggest getting it is it's a lot of things that I've done over the years. Like we've built, you know, we've done over $2 billion in business, and I started it from scratch. My father was semi-retired, but it's a lot of practical stuff. It's an easy read. You could probably read it in a day. And it's just giving you some general stuff about the knowledge. And I tell people this, it's funny. Again, I don't want to make money on it. I didn't do it for that reason. But one of the girls or ladies that came to one of my classes read it like 3 months before, and she was bragging for everybody. She read the book, and she's gotten 100 cases from it. I thought, oh, my gosh, I never wrote it. I didn't think about all the cases you can get. But she used a lot of the principles. And so I don't hold anything back. Everything in the book is what I kind of do. Because again, I can tell you all day long, you know, even last week, I mean, I tell everybody if you're going to listen to me for 8 hours, I give you the first 30 seconds. Here's the golden rule. Don't be selfish. Treat others the way you want to be treated and put others first and connect with jury, connect with people, connect with employees. And no one does it. So, you know.
Well, we'll link to the book in the show notes for today's episode. And Daryl, I really appreciate the gift of your time today. Thanks for being here with me. And we'll see everybody next time on Trial Lawyer View.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.